Hello, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is October the 14th, 2024, or the 12th day of Bull 2028. We will start our first service today with a sermon entitled The Latest News from Mother. That's track 4 by Vicki Holler. The Latest News from Mother by Hosea, chapters 1 and 2. The word of the Yahweh that came unto the Moses, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of the Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, the beginning of the word of the Yahweh by the Hosea. And the Yahweh said unto Hosea, Go take unto thee a wife of the whoredom, and children of the whoredom, for the land has committed great whoredom, departing from the Yahweh. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And the Yahweh said unto him, Call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the land of Jezreel. And she conceived again and bare a daughter, and Yahweh said unto him, Call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away, but I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Yahweh, their Yahweh, and will not save them by the bow, nor by the sword, nor by battle, by the horses, nor by horsemen. Now when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. Then said Yahweh, Call his name Lo-Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your Yahweh. Hosea 1:1-9. From the foregoing scriptures, it is seen that Hosea's wife and children, in vision only, and were therefore entirely figurative. They were so named as to make a fitting analogy of his people, Judah and Israel, and being of whoredoms, they fittingly prefigure the idolatrous state of his church. Continuing with the prophecy, we hear the Yahweh command Jezreel, Say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah, Hosea 2:1. The same pair of children introduced in the first chapter of the vision are in the second chapter redenominated, for the difference being that from both names is dropped the prefix lo, which in the Hebrews means lo accordingly, whereas Lo-Ruhamah means no mercy, and Lo-Ami, not my people. Ruhamah means mercy, and Ami, my people. Hosea 1:6-2:4. For this change of the status implied in the change of the names denotes a division of the church history. In one instance, the membership is called "not my people," receiving no mercy, and in the other instance, "my people" receiving mercy. For the Apostle Paul gave a key to this whole prophecy by revealing the interpretation of that part of it which met its fulfillment in his day. Even us, this is Paul talking now, whom he hath called not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. As he saith also in O.C., I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living Yahweh. Numbers 9:24-26. This is a modern day prophecy. And I can give you an interpretation of it. This Israel, where it says, Israel is not my people, it's talking about the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Because they were the 10 tribes recognized in 1890 by the prophet Ezekiel 4. Mm-hmm. When that 390 days was up for the 10 tribes of Israel. The 10 tribes of Israel in 1890 was the Adventist Church. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding, this great mercy, Judah continued to sin exceedingly against him. And the Yahweh of their father sent to them by his messengers, rising up big time and sinning because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. That they mocked the messengers of Yahweh and despised his word and misused his prophets until the wrath of Yahweh arose against his people till there was no remedy. Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldees, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion upon the young man or maiden, old man, or him that stooped with age. He gave them all into his hand. And all the vessels of the house of Yahweh, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Yahweh, and the treasures of the king, and of his princes, all these he brought to Babylon. And they burnt the house of Yahweh, and broke down the wall of Jerusalem, and burnt all the palaces thereof with the fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. 2 Chronicles 36:15-20. After the appointed time of the captivity, which was 70 years, Yahweh remembered his promise of mercy to them, and stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, This saith the Cyrus king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath Yahweh of the heaven given me, and he hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. And this house was furnished on the third day of the month Adar, which was in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. 2 Chronicles 36:22-23. Ezra 6:15. In so doing, Yahweh again kept his promises to Judah. But at 10 tribes Israel, he did not deliver, and thereby brought to pass his word, I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, the 10 tribes. Hosea 1:6. Now the Adventists represented the 10 tribes of Israel in our day, and in 1890, when the General Conference took over the House of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, it was the 10 tribes. So we got something there to have to consider. Why did Yahweh raise up another leadership in the Adventist Church to take charge of the Adventist Church? We'll find out about that later. Now, when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. Then said Yahweh, call his name Lo-Ruhamah, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your Yahweh. Hosea 1:8-9. In spite, though, of the Yahweh's repeated great mercy and wonderful deliverances in her behalf, Judah's continual sins finally led her utterly to forsake him by the denying of his only begotten son, Yahshua. And they cried out all at once, saying, away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas. Luke 23:18. Thus did Judah's backsliding at last bring upon her the dreadful anathema, you are not my people, and I will not be your Yahweh. He was talking to those Pharisees of the Old Testament up at the cross. Hosea 1:9. So far in this allegory, we see the history of the church up until the crucifixion of Yahshua. Now it is necessary to ascertain whether it contains the history of the New Testament period. While in chapter 1 of this vision, Hosea describes the church's idolatrous state and the Jewish dispensation. That's he's talking about the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, the house of David. In chapter 2, he correspondingly describes the church's idolatrous state and the apostolic dispensation of the New Testament. Say ye unto your brethren, Amen. And unto your sisters, Ruhamah, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredom out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and sit her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with the thirst. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they may be the children of Harlem, for their mother hath played the harlot. She that conceived them hath done shamefully, for she said, I will go after my lover, that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flesh, mine oil and my drink. Hosea 2:1-5. In the apostolic era, the church started out in an even more advantageous spiritual condition than in the Jewish era. Okay. Of the Old Testament. Let's read that again. For the apostolic followers of the Nazarene Creed at the cross of the New Testament era, the church started out in an even more advantageous spiritual condition than in the Jewish era. Besides, she could have profited by the example of the fallen Jews. But as the verses just quoted reveal, she utterly failed to do so. Instead, as with the passing of the Joshua, the Jews began to depart from the Yahweh, so with the passing of the apostles, the apostolic converts, that started calling them Christian, drifted likewise. And the lowering of the apostolic standard of the apostles that they had set up, performing their vows with the ordained system of true worship of the sanctuary, and performing their vows, they fell away from that and exalting the pagan. The church played the harlot with the heathen, and this way conceiving and bringing forth her so-called convert, she hath done shamefully, said to Yahweh, for she said, I will go after my lovers, that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flesh, mine oil and my drink. These are sentiments she reflected by her attitude that her every candidate for the membership, even though it's not truly converted, the Yahshua should nevertheless be baptized into the regular fellowship. Meanwhile, their financial support would further the work of the Yahweh. Reasoning like this is of a piece with that of the little girl who joyously exclaimed unto her mother, look, I have a good bargain. I got a good bargain from the peddler. Okay. For this bag full of cherries, I was supposed to have given a pound of wool. But instead of giving all wool, I hid your gold bracelet in it. To give church membership to those who have not brought forth fruit meet for the repentance is an even more costly stunt than to barter for cherries as though they were worth their weight in gold. Besides this foolish act of giving away shares in the church's estate, one cannot begin to count the cost of the demoralizing influence that such subversive stockholders exert upon the true people of Yahweh. By such folly, the early church unwittingly furthered the design of the wicked seed sower, and also brought upon herself the dark ages of the religion. yet even in spite of this frightful consequence, which should have taught her unforgettably the lesson to consecrate her zeal to the building up of a spirit-born membership only, she still continues heedless in her zeal for the large congregation. For a passion for the increase of the members without a commensurate burden, all their sanctification, their being born again, is engineered not by the Spirit of Yahshua, but rather by the carnal heart, which says, "I will go after my lovers. Give me my bread and my water, my wool, my flesh, my all, and my drink." Selfishness, ambition, greed, these are Satan's right-hand helpers. Had the early apostolic church continued in her time, and her first love for the salvation of souls and the advancement of the kingdom of Yahshua rather than for the enlargement of her membership, the enemies of operative, the terrors, could never have infiltrated into her ranks. But her zeal for the purity waned, and she gave herself to the raising of the gold, a selfish gain. Yea, saith the prophet, they are greedy dogs which can never have enough, and they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look to their own way, every one for his gain, from his quarter, Isaiah 56:11. How fearful the lesson! Never is the prosperity of the church to be sought in silver and gold, and never can she stand in the wisdom and power of men, though money has its place and her economy, it is not her most urgent need upon fidelity to the message of which she has been. Entrusted depends her only real success. This cause for men whom the Yahweh can trust and upon whom he may freely pour his spirit. Men who will stand true to principle, though the whole world turns against them. Men who will in the faith rise to the heights under which Yahshua bids, "Take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. For after all these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of the Yahweh and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself." Matthew 6:25, 32-34. all his father and the decaying trend of the Christian church, departing from the way of the Yahweh and going in the way which seemeth right unto a man, Proverbs 14:12, will experience the rod of Yahweh's chastening. Behold, I will hedge up thy way with the thorn, and make a wall, that she shall not find her path, and she shall follow after her lovers, that she shall not overtake them, and she shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall she say, I will go and return unto my first husband, for then was it better with me than now, and multiply her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal, Hosea 2:6-8. For she did not know that I gave her corn, wine, and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal, Hosea 2:6-8. When the church drifts with the current of the world away from the Yeshua, he can no longer bless her, lest he drive her the faster downstream toward the destruction. For the only way that he can then save her and bring her back to him is to withdraw his helping hand from her until she finds herself grounded on a reef of her own folly, with the fierce waves of the retribution beating over her side. Then only will she respond to his voice. For the Yahweh method of the bringing his church to a self-realization of her dangerous condition is portrayed in the Yahshua's parable of the prodigal. Had the father denied the boy's request to go, the lad would forever have been embittered with the feeling of what he believed was his father's injustice, and no one could ever have convinced him that his father did not deprive him of the opportunity of the winning great wealth and a name for himself. So his bitter experience along the of the disillusionment taught him the great lesson in his life that nothing else could ever have taught it unto him. This parable perfectly illustrates how wisely Yahweh deals with the church and her folly, and how her self-conceit led us in wisdom prevent her profiting from the experience of others. Instead of her overtaking, Christianizing her lovers, they overtook, paganized her. She shall not find them, because she has failed to save them. Only after going through her prodigality, she will penitently return unto her first husband, the Yahshua. To hasten her return, Yahshua overtakes her in the wilderness, thus fulfilling his word. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof. I will recover my wool, and my flesh given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast day, her new moon, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts. Isaiah 2:9-11. This is Yahweh's chastening her in the olden time by the permission Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, to abolish the ceremonial system by the destroying agent, Jerusalem and the temple. Yet so did he chasten her in the a Christian era by the permitting Rome to gain control over her and to supplant her true religious system by a counterfeit, a pagan priesthood, and a pagan Sabbath. Then was his word fulfilled, I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moon, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts. Since these ordinances, or at least her feast days, her Sabbath, etc., were part of a compacted prophecy of the Gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption, Acts of the Apostles 14. And since Hosea's symbolization has brought us into the Christian era, the ceasing of the ordinances therefore typifies Rome supplanting the truth. Daniel also was shown that this was to be accomplished through Rome, the exceeding great horn was cast down to the ground for the truth and the place of his Yahshua's sanctuary. Daniel 8:12-11. Note that the truth and the place, not the sanctuary itself, were cast out. That is, both Yahshua's truth and his place in the earthly sanctuary was set aside so that the knowledge as to his mediatorial work became obscure. For a detailed explanation of Daniel 8 and 9, see the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, 126-147, and Tract Number 3, page 27-32. And I will destroy, says the Yahshua, her vines and her fig trees, whereof she has said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beast of the field shall eat them, and I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense under them, and she decked herself with her earring and her jewels, royal display, and she went after her lovers, the world, and forget me, says the Yahshua. Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness away from the vineyard among the Gentiles and speak comfortably unto her. Hosea 2:12-14. This prediction was made over 1,000 years before she lost her vineyard and before she fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of Yahweh that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation 12:6. But while she was there in the fugitive retreat from her own land, Yahweh spoke comfortably unto her. In other words, she, like the wayward prodigal, had to have a bitter experience longing again for home before the Kashir could do anything for her. Thus, at the end of her exile, his overtures of love and mercy were to strike in her a truly responsive chord. As we have already seen, the symbolism shows the Christian church endowed with the sanctuary truth, Hosea 2:11, and since the Seventh-day Adventist church is known to be the only one with this doctrine, it is evident that this symbolical prophecy of the church history brings us this side of 1844 A.D. unto the founding of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. Consequently, the allegory now reveals her present condition and Yahweh's counsel unto her. Moreover, the fact that the unfolding of these chapters is now for the first time brought to the attention further proves that the lessons which they contain are expressing for the church that this are the first of which to be considered is the lesson of the typical valley of Achor. I will give her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of the hope. Hosea 2:15. Whatever may be the meaning of the valley of Achor, it is her door of hope. For the only way out of her predicament, to know why it is the door of the hope, is naturally of the most immediate interest. Only three times in the scriptures is the valley of the Achor mentioned. Once in a literal sitting, Joshua 7:24-26, and twice in a figurative sitting, Isaiah 65:10, Hosea 2:15. A study of the literal will give us the key that will unlock the meaning of the fugitive. The first city to fall into the hands of the Israelites upon their crossing the River Jordan was Jericho. The command to Joshua was that the city, with every living thing in it, be destroyed, burned with the fire, but that all the silver and gold and vessels of the brass and iron be consecrated unto the Yahweh and brought into the treasury of the Yahweh, Joshua 6:19. But the children of Israel committed a trespass and the accursed sin, and as a result they began to fall before their enemies, where upon Joshua said, "Alas, O Yahweh, for wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us, which to Yahweh we had been content and dwelt on the other side of the Jordan. O Yahweh, what shall I say? When Israel turneth her back before their enemies, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it, and shall environ us round, and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do unto thy great name?" And the Yahweh said unto Joshua, "Get thee up, wherefore thou shalt thus upon thy face. For Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, for they have even taken of their cursed thing, and have also stolen and disassembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy your curse from among you. Up, sanctify the people, and say this, sanctify yourself against tomorrow. For thus saith the Yahweh of Israel, there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. In the morning, therefore, you shall be brought according to your tribe. And it shall be that the tribe which the Yahweh taketh shall come according to the families thereof, and the family which the Yahweh shall take shall come by the household, and the household which the Yahweh shall take shall come man by man. Joshua 7:1-7:14. And Achan was taken, and he answered Joshua and said, indeed I have sinned against Yahweh of Israel, and thus have I done. When I saw among the spoils of the Babylonian garment, and 200 shekels of the silver, and a wedge of the gold, of the 50 shekels, which then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth and in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of the gold, and his son, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had, and his brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why hast thou troubled it? And the Yahweh shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with the stone, and burned them with the fire, after they had stoned them with the stone. Joshua 7:18-20:21-24-25. At that solemn time, Achan was the only sinner in the camp. But because of sin, the whole nation was about to fall, and thus Yahweh's great name be dishonored in the eyes of the heathen. Yahweh's dealing with Joshua revealed that his servants must vigilantly watch that no evil enter into the ranks, and that his word through his prophet he feared as though he himself were speaking directly unto the people. When did Joshua proclaim that there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel? Joshua 7:13. Achan concealed his guilt as long as possible. instead of immediately confessing it, when finally it was brought to light and he was taken, he answered Joshua and said, "Indeed, I have sinned against the Yahweh of Israel." But alas, it was too late then for Yahweh to either to accept his confession and pardon his sin, or to vindicate his people unless they fulfill their obligation to deal with the sinner strictly in accordance with the manner he had prescribed. Now all these things happened unto them for an example, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the world are come. Wherefore let him cannot think of his standard take heed lest he fall. 1 Corinthians 10:11-12. For the valley of Israel, Joshua 6:7, therefore is a type of the valley of Acre of Hosea 2. With the key here in hand, we are now to unlock the mystery connected with the door of the hope and discover what present truth lesson lies within the antithetical valley of Acre. Had not this remarkable judicial writ been intended for and ensample, Yahweh would not have designated the very place of Achan's punishment, his execution. Then in the valley of Acre points forward to the time of an antitypical execution within the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the spiritual Israel of today. Hence, this antitypical valley of Acre, her door of hope, can but point unto the destruction of the sinner, terrors in the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church for illegitimate children. See Testimony 5, page 80. Unmistakably, the type showed that during this purification, Yahweh will destroy not only every sinner among his people, but also their families and all their belongings with them. The sieve is moving, declares the spirit of the truth. Let us not say, stay the hand of the Yahweh, for the church must be purged, and it will be. And I saw that the Yahweh was waiting, Yahshua was the son of Yahweh, was waiting his sword in heaven to cut them down. Oh, that every lukewarm professor could realize the clean work that the Yahshua is about, the son of Yahweh is about to make among his professed people. Testimony of Zion 1, page 100 and 109. For the type also shows that Yahweh, the Father, will undertake this clean work among his professed people. Just before he entrusts them with his very last message to the world, the message of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, Malachi 4:5. For the power of this dreadful day is to lighten the earth with his glory, Revelation 18:1, and enable his people to repossess the antitypical promised land, the earth, when the worthless material is consumed, the church clad in the complete armor of the light and righteousness, and enters upon her final conflict, and the influence of the truth testifies unto the world of the sanctifying and nobling character. Testimony to Ministry, page 17 and 18. Thus the gospel or the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, the new and living way of the kingdom, shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Matthew 24:14. For all these, the imminent purification of the Seventh-day Adventist Church by the ensuing loud cry, or with the ensuing loud cry of the third angel's message, having joined the fourth and the fifth angel, the fourth angel in Revelation 7 and the fifth angel in Revelation 18, and the restoration of the kingdom and the land of our fathers, with the subsequent conquering of the nations, all these, the type, demands them because Achan was executed and the camp freed from the sentence before ancient Israel could conquer the promised land. Accordingly, after her purification, after she has taken heed to the call of Israel, Isaiah 52:1, then clad in the armor of Yahshua's righteousness, the church is to enter upon her final conflict, clear as a moon, clear as a sun, and terrible as an army with banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. Prophecy 7:25. For the prophet Ezekiel also was given a vision of this final purification of the church. His prophecy reveals that everyone who fails to receive the mark or seal is to fall under the slaughter weapons of the five men, Ezekiel 9, and that all old and young, both maids and little children and women, will all perish together. Testimonies, Volume 5, page 211. Ezekiel 9, 6, as typified by the ancient destruction, then sample this unassailable sequence of the fact. Only bulwarks the spirit of the prophecy position that the sealing of the service of Yahweh and the sign is the sign that was shown unto Ezekiel in the vision, that the true people of the Yahweh will always be on the side of the faithful and plain dealing with the sin, which easily beset the people of Yahweh, especially in the clergy work for the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the sealing time of the 144,000 in the Adventist Church. Testimonies at the Ministers, page 445. Testimonies, Volume 3, page 266. Observe how definitely the foregoing testimony places the purification of the church before the gospel work is finished, and immediately before the loud cry of the third angel's message, having joined the fourth and the fifth, to swell it into the loud cry, and the time of the judgment of the living in the 12th apostolic hour that we've been in since 2002, it clearly states that the closing work for the church is a sealing time. The closing work for the church is in the sealing time of the 144,000, and the fact that these are the first fruits proves that this work for the church is the commencement of the harvest, and that after they are sealed and the church purified, a second priest are to be gathered in, for where there is no second gathering, there can be no first. For this twofold harvest is brought to view also in Revelation 7, after beholding the gathering, the sealing of the 144,000 first fruits. John saw the subsequent ingathering of the great multitude out of all nations, Revelation 7:9, the second fruit. This brings the end of our subject, our contest. This is the 11th article, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.